growth and change and success and exceeding our limits and getting to be great in anything is not going to be a self-help program. You're going to have to do it in relationship. You're going to need a coach. You're going to need support. You're going to need a mentor. You're going to basically need to start with a little circle of a few people that can help you along the way.
This is the L3 Leadership Podcast, episode number 155. What's up, everyone, and welcome to episode number 155 of the L3 Leadership Podcast. My name is Doug Smith, and I'm the founder of L3 Leadership. We're a leadership development company devoted to helping you become the best leader that you can be. In this episode, you're going to get to hear me interview Dr. Henry Cloud. If you're unfamiliar with Dr. Cloud, he's an acclaimed leadership expert, a psychologist, and a best-selling author, and his work has impacted my life in a huge way, which is why this was such a special interview for me, and he's also impacted literally the lives of millions of people all over the planet through his work. In this interview, you're going to get to hear us talk about the leadership principles he shares in three of his books, three of my favorites. You're going to actually get to hear him share his process for writing books, which was extremely fascinating. You'll hear him share his advice for young leaders and why he believes coaching is absolutely essential for every leader. I do want to encourage you to check out the show notes. There's lots of ways to connect with Dr. Cloud, and you can find all of that at l3leadership.org/episode155. You'll find links to connect with Dr. Cloud on the web as well as social media. You'll find links to the books that we discussed in the interview, a link to Dr. Cloud's podcast, and a link that is actually an opportunity for you to get coached and your team to get coached by Dr. Cloud through Leadership University, a program that he created to help develop leaders. It's a phenomenal opportunity, and you can learn more about Leadership University in the show notes by clicking the link there, and you'll also hear Dr. Cloud talk about it in this episode. But before we jump into the interview, just a few announcements. If you're new to this podcast, I just want you to know that we're committed to bring you three or four episodes every single month to add value to you as a leader. One will always be a talk from a leadership event that we host. One will be an interview that I do with a high-level leader, and then once a month you'll get a leadership lesson by me. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, it would mean the world to me if you would subscribe and leave a rating and review on iTunes or whatever app you listen to podcasts on. It really does help us grow our audience organically, so thank you for that. I want to thank our sponsor, Henny Jewelers, a jeweler owned by my friend and mentor, John Henny. My wife, Laura, and I got our engagement and wedding rings at Henny Jewelers, and they're just an incredible company. Not only do they have great jewelry, but what I really love about them is they invest in people. John gave Laura and I a book to help us prepare for our marriage. He's also been investing in me as a leader, a father, and a husband now for many years, and I'm so grateful for him. If you're in need of a good jeweler, check out hennyjewelers.com. I want to thank our other sponsor, Alex Tulandon Real Estate Resources. Alex is a full-time realtor with Keller Williams Realty, whose team is committed to providing clients with highly effective, premier real estate experiences throughout the greater Pittsburgh region. He's a member and a supporter of L3 Leadership and would love an opportunity to connect with you. If you want to connect with Alex, go to PittsburghPropertyShowcase.com. That's PittsburghPropertyShowcase.com. With that being said, let's jump right into the interview with Dr. Cloud. Enjoy, and I'll be back at the end with a few announcements. Well, hey, Dr. Cloud, thank you so much for taking the time to allow me to interview. And through your life and your work, you've literally changed the lives of millions of people. And I'm just really curious, what are some things that you wish people knew about the journey that took you to where you are today? What are some of the prices that you've had to pay to get there?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's been a fun journey for one. But I think anybody looking at their path, if they want, you know, if they have a vision and want to do something that's meaningful, the thing that I would like for everybody to know is, mine included, it's just going to be really hard. And, you know, one of the things we know about the accomplishment of anything is the number one factor that loads on whether or not, you know, good things happen and goals happen and visions happen. The number one factor is the belief that it can be done. But when they break out that factor, it's not just optimism only, like, you know, you can do this, it's going to be great. It is all of that, but it's also got to be, sort of integrated with a real acknowledgement. This is going to be great. It's worth doing. It's awesome. But there's going to be some really hard parts to this, and have people prepared for that. Because if you're prepared for that, then when the obstacles come, you don't think anything's gone wrong. Actually, you think the opposite. You think, I'm still at it, right?
Yeah.
So you know, what people tend to do is they'll look at what somebody's done, you know, or kind of where they are, what they've accomplished in some field or whatever, and they'll see that as a snapshot, and they don't see the whole movie about, you know, how much work actually goes into anything good. So that's probably what I would share. And that work is fun, you know?
Yeah.
The battles are fun. The struggles are fun. Looking back, not when you're in it.
Seriously, yeah. That's so good. I want to take a few minutes and just walk through a few of your books. I've been impacted greatly by many of them, and I know a lot of millions of other people have as well. I want to focus the first one, probably the one that's made the biggest impact on my life, was Changes That Heal. And you broke the book into four different sections. One was about growing up, and you said everyone needs to experience these four things. One is bonding to others, separating from others, boundaries, and growing into adulthood. And I'm just curious, from a leadership perspective, you know, when I've introduced this book to people, I found that this brings up a lot of issues that the people are somewhat hesitant to deal with. Why is it important for leaders to grasp some of these principles and do the hard work to work through this?
Oh, gosh. Well, it is hard work. It's sort of like, you know, I'm going to oversimplify it, and then we'll get into the particulars. But it's a little bit like saying, well, you know, if you want to win an Olympic medal, why doesn't everybody just go do what Michael Phelps does and embrace the getting in cold water every morning at 4:30 and, you know, swimming 10 hours laps? And it's just work, you know. Everybody wants the gold medal, but nobody wants to do the work. And what I tried to do in that book was show that, look, if you want the gold medal in life, and basically what I think that means is that you find what you're designed for and what you're created to be and a path to live that out in two areas. One is meaningful, fulfilling relationships, both personal and professional. It's the only way that we get fulfilled. And the second side is meaningful and fruitful and successful work, whatever that means to you and your calling. And so what people are always trying to do is they're trying to go find that gold medal. They're trying to find the right relationship or make relationship, you know, have it be wonderful or have a career be wonderful. But remember, you are the equipment that's got to make that happen. So if you're wanting a good marriage or a good relationship, or you're wanting a good career, you don't go have a good relationship or have a good career. You work on creating the person, the development in the person, that's you, who's able to have a good relationship and able to be successful. So that book was basically about, look, when things aren't going well or we're not getting where we want to get, that there really are four key developmental issues that kind of order an intact, functional, fruitful person. And the first one is the ability to connect with others, the ability to make, you know, just meaningful connections and emotional investments and trust and bonds that fuel us and fuel others and make everything grow. The second one is the ability to establish freedom and autonomy within those relationships. So if you're connected, you know, I just met with a leader who is leaving his wife after, I met with a son whose his dad is leaving his wife and blowing up the family after 20 years. And the reason is he feels like he's too controlled and constrained in his marriage. People find that in companies, for example. And they haven't learned to feel free and autonomous and not controlled by the people that they're connected to. So then they run off and be hyper-independent, can't have relationships or closeness without feeling like they lose their freedom. And so that's the second one, learning how to be autonomous and in your relationships to stand up and have boundaries and say, no, I don't like this, or I want to do this and not that, or not letting other people define you. That's the second one. The third one is we're all created to be, you know, we were supposed to live in a perfect world. Well, that didn't work out so well. And now we've got these ideals and there's the success we want, but we also have imperfection and failure. We also have losses and pain. And so we've got to be able to negotiate this coexistence of the ideal and what I want and the reality of the badness that I encounter along the way, and pain and struggle and loss and failure. And some people never get there. They want to have a good relationship, a good job, a good career, but they go join that company or have that relationship, and then it starts to, you know, there's some issues and it's not perfect, and there's disappointments. Well, instead of learning to work through those, they go look for the next perfect one. And they have a series of start, stop, start, stop, start, stop. And everything's either good or bad. They want to succeed. They have a failure. They feel all bad and like a loser. And then they blow off the goodness of the goal. And so we've got to be able to learn to be comfortable as imperfect beings pursuing our ideals, pursuing relationships, pursuing success, and know we're going to encounter failure along the way. And be comfortable with that and be skilled enough to deal with it. And then the fourth thing is that we all grow up little people in a big person's world. It feels like everybody else is above us and we're inferior. But then, you know, you learn how to finally, you know, get the eggs in your mouth and the broccoli in your mouth, and mom or dad turns that over to you, and now you're able to eat on your own, right? You have that authority. Then you learn to go to the bathroom by yourself. Then you learn to pick friends, and then you, and gradually you're supposed to grow up, and you know, somewhere around 18 or 22, I think in California is 47, but adulthood is reached where you feel like you're equal to other adults, not in terms of abilities or talents always, but you don't look at other people like parent figures, like they can, you know, judge you and control your opinions and all that, where everybody's got to grow up and learn to be an adult. And when you master those four arenas, and I don't mean perfectly, but, you know, I come from a faith perspective as well as a science perspective. I love the word the Bible uses about that. It doesn't mean flawless. The word means mature or complete. And so when we've completed or get to maturity, where by and large we can connect with people, by and large we can stand on our own two feet and be independent in those relationships, interdependent. Number three, by and large, we're mature enough to, you know, we get bugged and, you know, fail and all that, but we can deal with it and overcome it, forgive it, and let it go. And then where we can find our own talents and abilities, that's a pretty good package. And if people could just always try to understand, keep seeking those four areas of growth, and you'll do well.
Yeah, that's so good. I am curious. There was a woman that actually gave me this book through some things that I was going through, and it changed my life. And she said, make sure you get the workbook and do the work. And I laughed at the time, and I said, I never do workbooks. And she said, well, it must be really great to read all these books and not actually do any of the work in them, which was a game changer.
It's hilarious. You know, some people walk up to me and I got this problem, this, that, and the other, and I'll go, yeah, well, read chapter two of you know, this book I wrote. And they go, oh, yeah, I read that book. And I said, well, did you do what it said? And they go, no, but I read it.
Yeah, so I would say I've been there. And I'm just curious, what advice do you have? I mean,
it's,
I guess,
like,
it's just
the guy that weighs 380, but he's got a book on, you know, how to lose weight, right?
yeah. So I guess whether it's this book or any of your books, what's the best way to actually, if someone just listened to everything that you said and they said, I need to grow in all of those areas, where would you recommend starting? Is it just grabbing the book and starting to do the workbook? Any other recommendations for fleshing out the work in your books?
Yeah, but what you're going to see is basically every one of them, there's an operating system that goes through. You know, if you're a physicist and you learn the laws of gravity, you're not going to write a second book on building airplanes that negates the laws of gravity, right?
Yeah.
So if you look at all of my books, no matter what the topic is, there's going to be a consistent operating system throughout. And the first place it says you always have to begin, and I recently wrote a book on this called The Power of the Other, is to realize that growth and change and success and exceeding our limits and getting to be great in anything is not going to be a self-help program. You're going to have to do it in relationship. You're going to need a coach. You're going to need support. You're going to need a mentor. You're going to basically need to start with a little circle of a few people that can help you along the way and give you what you don't need, and a little circle of people that are on that same path with you. That's the only way it happens. And all the research, all the science, everything shows that people that get to the next level begin by plugging into the right people. And literally, the people you surround yourself with in that inner circle are going to be the best predictor of where you end up.
That's so good. I'm glad you brought up the power of the other. I did want to discuss that. So we don't have time to unpack the entire context of the book, but essentially there's four corners of relationships. And you say that the goal is to get to that corner four relationships, which is really what you just described. I'm just curious, can you provide a little context for corner four? But really, I'm curious, what do corner four relationships look like in your life? How have you intentionally pursued those? And then how can others do the same?
Well, real quickly, what I tried to do was I wanted to give leaders and other people a GPS where they could ask themselves a question, where am I? You know, that's a good thing to know, right? If I'm trying to get from here to there, well, the first thing you do on Google Maps is it shows you where you are. And so there's only four places we can be in the relational universe at any moment. And I'd call them four corners. And the first corner is we're disconnected. It's sort of like a cell phone that says searching. You know, we can't find a network. And we need to connect. And so when we're not, we're lost. We don't have the next answer. We got confusion. We don't have fuel, all of that. So that's corner one. That doesn't work. When a Navy SEAL lands behind enemy territory, they look at their GPS and they ask three questions. Where am I? Number one. Number two, where's the enemy? And number three, the most important one, where's my buddy? If you answer number three right, you know where your buddy is. You can find the answers to one and two. And so if we're in that corner one where we don't have anybody and we're kind of on a team trying to figure it out on our own and we can't talk to anybody or nobody's helping, we're lost. So that's corner one. Well, then we don't like that. So we go to corner two. Corner two is kind of the bad connection. And that's a connection, may not be abusive per se or anything, but it's a connection where you end up feeling bad about yourself, about what's happening. You're just not good enough. You can't meet the expectations. You feel judged. You feel guilty. You feel like inferior. And people like that we connect to that make us feel that way, that's not going to get us closer to any good goal. So that corner two is a bad connection, and that just sucks. I mean, it's just awful. It's awful to be on a team like that. It's awful to have a boss like that where you never can, you know, be good enough. So we go, well, you know, corner two didn't work out so well. I want to feel good. So we go down to corner three, and corner three is where we try to self-medicate. And so you're going to find something to make you feel good. Some people turn to substances. Somebody might have an affair. You know, somebody might get addicted to online something. Somebody might pursue, you know, the next trophy, you know, the next sales figure, the next promotion. They're trying to do something to make themselves feel good. And the next trophy is not going to do it. And sometimes we don't even see the right trophy. I got a friend, Michael Jr., who's a comedian. He said, have you ever heard Michael Jr.?
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Tell everybody, Google Michael Jr. One day I heard him say, yeah, I talked to this dude who said he had a trophy wife. I met his wife. I said, what place did you come in?
That's awesome.
He said, well, sometimes, you know, the trophies we pursue, we kind of like, you know, aren't even clear about what might be helpful. And
that's
so
good.
Corner three, you know, yeah, you're going to feel good for a day, but you're going to wake up the next day and nothing's changed. You're going to have a hangover or you got something. You know, you need another fix or something. So that leaves only one good option, and that's corner four. In corner four, what I wrote about in the book is these are the relationships where you get fueling. These are relationships that foster your autonomy and independence and self-control. They don't control you, and they don't let you be out of control. These are the relationships that foster responsibility and hold us accountable. Those are the ones that help us. These are the relationships that push us, that challenge us. You know, we're all at some level and we think we're doing everything we can. Somebody comes along and says, you know what, you can do better than that. You can lift 10 more pounds. No, I can't. Yeah, you can. We're going to do it. And they push us. And they do that well. and they're the relationships. The next thing is in corner four, they do something I call defang the beast. And defanging the beast means that sometimes our goals and standards turn into judges. And we feel like, you know, I can't reach it. And the goal actually criticizes us in a way. You get on the scales and you see the number you ought to have, or you look at your bank account and you see the number you ought to have, and it judges you instead of inspires you. And what corner four relationships do is they help us hold on to, you can do this, but when you don't reach it, don't go all bad. You know, don't criticize yourself and feel like you're a loser, but use that knowledge and use that ideal of, gosh, there's more, how can I do better? And become a learning person in relation to the goal. So the reality is, whether it's a company in its culture or a team or an individual, that the only place we're going to succeed is corner four, where we get fueled and corrected and be held accountable and pushed and challenged and comforted when we fail. You get people like that on your team, and you know, you're going to look like Michael Phelps. You know, you look at anybody, like if you look at Phelps or, you know, Bill Gates, or, you know, I listed a bunch of them in the book, you'll always find who their corner four relationships were. The coach that came along when Phelps was 13 or 14, you know, and you got Gates saying people like Warren Buffett, and you gotta have your corner four people, or you're a cell phone searching for a connection, and all the science in the world has proven that.
That's so good. And I'll include links to all of these in the show notes as well for those who want to purchase one. I highly recommend all of these. The last book I want to focus on before we get into some other topics is one of my favorites, is Necessary Endings. I give this book away often, and people always say the same thing. This was a light bulb moment for me. This was a life-changing book for me. And I'm just curious, it's such a unique book in the niche that you write in. Why did you write this book,
Necessary Endings? Why did I write Necessary Endings?
Yeah.
You know, the way I write books, I'm not smart enough to go sit on a rock and come up with a good idea. Right? I'm a practitioner, right? So I work with CEOs and I work with high performers. And the way I write books is actually the work writes it for me. And I work with these high performers in these issues, and that's kind of like research. And whenever I find myself seeing some really important issue over and over again, and I can't find any resource to give the person, that's, or I'm seeing it in a different way maybe than I've ever read about, then I go, you know what? Somebody needs to speak to this issue. And there were a few years in there specifically where I just kept seeing high performers over and over and over who were holding on to things, or holding on to people, or holding on to a strategy, or holding on to a product line, or whatever, and especially a dysfunctional employee or teammate or team member. And there was time, it was time for a necessary ending. And I chose that title because there are some endings in life that person's got to go. It's not going to work. Or that strategy's got to go. You know, why did it take a bankruptcy judge for General Motors? A bankruptcy judge shut down Pontiac as a brand. At 4 decades, it hadn't made a profit. These are the smartest leaders in the world. And some judge comes along and says, what are you guys doing? You know, the season for that brand is over. But these leaders couldn't do it because they were too emotionally attached to it, or they, you know, false hope. And so I just found people who were stuck, even high performers, because they were having difficulty pulling the trigger on when to give up hope on something. And I just tried to give the anatomy of when do you go further and when do you wave the white flag. And that's what that book's about.
Yeah, it was so good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for writing that.
If it weren't for Necessary Endings, I always say to audiences, how many of you married your prom date? You know, you get one or two hands that prove exceptions that prove the rule, but look at the rest of them. I go, what if you hadn't ended that one?
That's beautiful.
Now everybody understands Necessary Endings, right?
Yeah. Well, you are talking to one exception. I married my prom date, and
there you go. And so that's the point of the book, that there are some things that we invest in and we connect with that, man, it's just right for a long time. And there are other things that are right for a season. And there are other things that we're just going down the wrong road. And the worst thing you can have when you're headed down the right road is hope that wrong road is going to somehow turn into the right road. No, it's time to put it in reverse, do a U-turn, and in that direction, go in a different one.
That's so good. What really helped me in that book was just starting to view endings as normal, especially as a young leader. That's not something that was normal for me. I wanted all seasons to last forever. And so when seasons started to end, it was very difficult for me. But actually seeing them as normal has enabled me to get through those tough seasons, but also now enabled me to help others. And really, I just hand them a copy of your book. So thanks again.
Well, I appreciate your help in getting it out there because, you know, people walk up to me and say, I read Necessary Endings. It really, really helped me. My first feeling is compassion, because I know anybody that says that book was helpful was facing some kind of painful decision, and there was something they knew that wasn't right with something, and they were having to do it. So I think it's a very helpful message, and just thanks for spreading the word.
Yeah. I just want to take 1 minute and talk to you about writing. You kind of talked about your process for how you write books, but in The Power of the Other, you actually shared a story about what enabled...
Well, I talked about the process of how I come up with the topic, right?
Right.
That's different than the process of writing a book.
Well, yeah, so that's what could you just touch base on that, what you shared in The Power of Other? Because you struggled at first to write your first book, it sounds like, and then you adapted this process. Can you just share that and maybe any advice you'd give to aspiring authors?
Yeah, let me just talk around it for a little bit and distinguish between those two. Let me talk a little bit about how the process, how I write a book. Now, one of the things because I hear this all the time. I mean, people come up to me all the time. I mean, I wish I could tell you. If I had a nickel for every time somebody's come up to me and said, oh, I've always wanted to write a book. I got this book I got to write. And I say, well, why don't you write it? And they go, well, you know, I don't really have time and I'm working. I have heard that so many times that I just want to take a book and conk them over the head with it. Because I've always worked, you know, 50 plus hours a week. And when I was single, more. And I'm not trying to sound weird here. I'm just trying to say, dude, this is dual. I've written 45 books and I don't have time to write a book. I'm a full-time practitioner. Right? And so it's not really that you don't have time. What it is you're stuck because you don't have a process.
That's good.
One of my favorite stories is, you know, John Grisham has written a few books, right?
Yeah.
Millions and millions and millions and millions of copies. John Grisham was a full-time attorney and a state legislator who had a dream of writing a book. Doesn't have time, right? Well, you do if you understand how to write a book. So what he did was, you don't write a book, you write words. Nobody writes a book. You don't sit down and come out of that room at lunchtime with a book. It's a process. And so what John Grisham did was, he got up, let's say 30 minutes early or an hour early every day for a year. And a year later, he had a book called Time to Kill. And you probably saw the movie. Yeah. And that started this empire. Well, a book is written in a process. And what I always say to people is, don't think about writing a book. These people say, I got a book in me. Of course you do. You've lived something. You know something. And if you haven't had a life and you haven't studied something and learned something, then you don't have a book and you need to go get a life and learn something first. Right? The last thing we need is another book that doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
But a lot of people have two or three books in them of what they've experienced, what they've learned, the wisdom, the failures, you know, the expertise, whatever it's in. The task of writing a book is to get what's inside of you onto a page. That's what writing a book is about. There are 1,000 different ways to do that. what my publisher, one of my publishers told me one time, I write my books. I write every word. And my publisher told me at, you know, that kind of level of publishing and, you know, platform and all that, my publisher told me that I'm the only person that she works with and knows that actually writes their own books. Now, what does that mean? Well, I sit down, type every word. She said, I don't know anybody that does that. And I said, what do most of them do? And she started telling me the stories. You know, a lot of them, you take a CEO who's lived this great story and knows all this, you know what they'll do? Some of them will lock themselves up in a room with a tape recorder and tell the story. And they give the tapes to a ghostwriter and they get it on the page. You still wrote the book. It's your work. It's your research. Other people, they pull together a research team and get them to go do all the other research that goes with what they want to write about and all it. There's a thousand different ways to do it, but you got to develop a process for how you're going to do it. I was working with a CEO recently who has an unbelievable story. And if I mention his name, everybody would know him and what he's accomplished. You use it every single day. And everybody's wanting him to write a book, and he couldn't get started. And he had told me this story about how he started the company and this, that, and the other. And he said, but I can't, you know, I don't know how to write and this, that, and the other. We were driving. There were four of us in the car. We were driving. I was sitting in the back seat. We were driving an hour and a half to a meeting. I said, just tell me your story about how you started the company. So he started telling me the story. What he didn't know is I was in the back seat and I was typing, and I'm a fast typer. I just typed down the story. We got to the meeting. Later on, I went to my room. I spent about an hour and a half kind of cleaning it up and editing. I printed it out and I said, here you go. Wow. I said, you just wrote a book. You just wrote the first chapter. You just wrote more than the first chapter. Get an editor and here you. And now the book's published. So the question is, how do you get it on a page? Now, what I do is I never know what I'm going to write. I let the work speak to me. So what I do is I start to see examples. I start to see things I read about an issue. I start to see an issue over and over and over. And I always carry some way of capturing that around with me. I use a program called OneNote. And so I'll have some files in there of particular topics, and I'm just dropping notes in there, Something starts like necessary endings. It starts to look like this is a topic that might have legs. I might want to write about this. So then I'll start a subfile called endings, and I'll just capture stories, and I'll read something in journals or Harvard Business Review or, you know, Wall Street Journal or Neuroscience or see an example with a CEO that relates to endings. I jot that down. I write it. I drop it in that file. Well, when that starts to really congeal, then I start to kind of talk about it because I'm teaching the stuff in companies and, you know, this, that, and the other, and it starts to congeal. And then I go, I think I got a book here. And I go talk to a publisher and I get a deal. And then we have a deadline. And then it's basic math. I got to produce 80,000 words, and I got, you know, 8 months to do it. What's my pace on that? You know, I looked at a calculator the other day, and I was laughing. I plugged it in, and I figured out, like, just to test the calculator program this guy had on writing a book, like what I could write in an hour and a half, and if I did that one day a week, I think it came up in 249 days my book is done.
Wow.
So what I do is I take that file, and it's substantial at this point, and I'll lock myself up. I'll schedule a few days, and I'll lock myself up in a room. I usually go away to do this, and I do a dump, and I dump that whole thing out, every point, and then I start to categorize that into concepts and structures and chapters. And then I have the basic direction of the book. And from there, I just start writing it. So that's how I do it. Does that help?
That's fantastic. Yeah. I want to spend a few minutes on coaching. So you have an opportunity.
Let me just say this, though, because you asked about my first book.
Yeah.
What I just told you, I didn't know. Right? I was in my 20s. I was building models and teaching them in organizations about how to develop and how to, you know, the stuff. And there was an organization that said to me, is this written down anywhere? And I said, no, it's sort of in my head. And they go, well, we want you to write a book on it so we can take it worldwide and use it to train our 50,000 employees. And I said, well, I don't know how to write a book. And they go, well, yeah, you can. I said, no, I can't. Write a book. And so this is to illustrate the power of the other, how we need help. So I was a consultant for this company. So they hired a consultant to be a consultant to me to get a book written. And so, you know, in The Power of the Other, I tell that story and how it worked. But that consultant helped me find my process. And what I did in that book was I found my process. And mine was before OneNote, and I captured on 3x5 cards. I collected them for a while. Every day I'd come home, throw them in a box. And then I started writing the book, and I dumped them out and categorized them, like I said. And what I did was I was working full time. And on December 1st, one year, I decided, okay, from Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock when I finished work until Monday morning, I was dedicating that to writing the book because all I had was weekends. And I said, and I'm going to give myself Saturday night to go out, friends, a date or something. And so I started working on it in those parameters. And on June 1st, I had a book written, but I needed help to do it. Now I don't, but you know, I learned.
Find your process. I love it. I want to take a few minutes and just talk about coaching. You have an opportunity to coach some of the greatest leaders on the planet. And really, I'm just curious, why does anyone need coaching? And then I know you have an opportunity really for everyone to be coached by you through a program you created called Leadership University. Can you talk a little bit about that and how it can help people?
Well, everybody needs coaching because that is how we are designed. Now, I'm going to say that again. Everybody needs coaching, in quotation marks, whatever coaching is. What that means is outside help. Because we are designed to build neuro pathways in our brain to get to the next level. New behavior, new success. When an Olympic runner gets to the next speed, then new circuitry has had to develop to order that performance. Okay. Now, the only way that new circuitry gets developed, it's just like your computer. If your computer's able to do something today, or it's not able to do something today because it has a bug or a virus, or there's code that's written that's goofy, your computer, you're not going to go to bed and wake up the next morning and your computer has gotten fixed. What's got to happen? You got to be online and it's got to download some updates. It's got to download new coding or it's got to download some fixes for the bugs. It's got to download new software to get to the next level. It's got to get an update. It's got to get a patch. Human performance is exactly like that. That's why you don't go sign up today to be a Navy SEAL and they send you to Afghanistan. They put you in a process of training, and that is a highly relational process where you get coached, you get pushed, you get corrected, you get fueled, you get the snot wiped off your nose when you can't make it. You learn knowledge, you learn different ways. And so the reason people need coaches is that there's no such thing as a self-made person. There just isn't. And so we need them. And that's why I say we have to have them. The trick is finding the right ones and the right kinds and what you need from the coaching process.
That's good. And so
I'll tell you something that's been amazing to me. I'm just feel so blessed because I do get to work with some of the world's best. And here's what I've learned over the years, and it really, I should have known this, but I've just seen it so much, it's like I learn it anew every day. The higher the performer, the more they utilize me. It's really interesting. I grew up competitive golfer and still a golfer, and I went to the Masters this spring, and I was there, and I was sitting on the range, the practice range, watching the guys get ready. And the great ones, they're sitting there hitting balls, and their coach is standing right there. Because they can't see their swing. They don't know what they need to do differently. They can't, you know, or sometimes they don't know how. And if we're a closed system and we're not taking input from outside of ourselves, we're screwed. That's just facts. So that's why we need them.
That's great. And can you talk a little bit about Leadership University and how people can take advantage of that and grow with your content?
Yeah. One of the things that I've loved doing for the last 30 years is going into organizations and working with one-on-one with CEOs or with their teams or building out programs for their entire culture. And what I started to see was that there are a lot of companies that you get a company that's about, when they get to about 10 or 15 million or so, because some person has started this, that person knew widgets or technology or whatever it was, but now they find themselves with two jobs. Now they're leading, and they don't realize leading is its own expertise, as well as technology or sales or marketing or whatever they do. And now they got two jobs, one of which they're trained for, one of which they're not. And what I was amazed at it wasn't until a company was usually, now there are exceptions, but usually it wasn't until they got to about 5 billion or so that you would see a very intentional internal leadership university. Like GE, for example, when Jack Welch was there, you know, he built Croydonville. And everybody would go through Leadership University at a company like that, and they would get basic skills in leadership as well as electronics, right? They already knew that, but they would learn to be leaders. And that's what I've done in companies for 30 years or so. Well, when I started seeing, you know, the capacities a few years ago, we were getting to a place with technology where we really could do much more virtual coaching, where I could coach people and not be in their company. So I took the same process that I've used, you know, in all the companies that I work with and the CEOs that I work with. And I took the elements of that process and I put it into a digital format where companies could scale it and plug these holes of development in people that they had hired or came from another company or their vertical wasn't doing the leadership development when other verticals were. And I just tried to make a simple, scalable leadership development path. We call it Leadership University. And we sell it to individuals and we sell it to companies. And, you know, we have companies that will scale it. So all their teams are using it and the individuals are using it. It's modular. It's entertaining. Instead of a talking head, we decided to make it an interactive TV show. Sort of like Anthony Bourdain style, and I travel the world and we embed the concept in a story. And people have a sign. So it's not just a seminar. You see these leadership development things where it's a seminar and then people leave the seminar and then what? You know?
Yeah.
This is a path. It's monthly and it gives you assignments and stuff you do and relational experiences with others, and it gets to some of these core elements of what leaders need to do. And so that's Leadership University. You can go to drcloud.com and find it. And we're just having a blast with it. It's so much fun.
Oh, that's great. And again, I'll include links in the show notes for that as well. As we wrap up, just two final questions. One is just really open-ended, but for those listening and who follow your work, how can we serve you, be a part of what you're doing, and even just pray for you personally?
Well, I sure appreciate the last part. I just remind this every day, you know, trying, I remember, I think it was Martin Luther that said, I've got so much to do. I'm going to have to pray for 4 hours instead of two. You know, it's like, why do this on your own? You know, ask God for help, right? So thank you for that. But what, how people could help me, you know, the biggest problem that I have is just trying to help people become aware of the tools. And so what I would love help with from anybody is just, you know, if this has been helpful, you know, send a friend a link and say, check this out, you know, or a book title. But Leadership University, you know, go online, look at the link, go tell your company, you know, you'd like to go through this, or you'd like to take your team through it, or send it to friends. That's the biggest way that they could help me in my mission.
You got it. And then I'll just leave this open-ended. But
they contact a guy on my team named Greg Starr at, what's Greg's email address? It's g.starr with two R's at drcloud.com. Then he will hook you up.
Great.
Your company.
Yep, and I'll include all of his contact info as well. And then this is just really open-ended, but if you had any last thing, or you want to leave us with any advice for young leaders, what would it be?
I had a wealth management CEO tell me one time. I got a young leader who was just starting out in that industry. And he asked me, gosh, could I ever talk to that CEO, you know, just to get some advice? I said, probably not, but I'll ask him what he would tell me. and so I asked him, and he said, yeah, tell him this. And he basically said, you know, somebody in that business, their own business 20 years later is going to look pretty much like the clients and the people they surround themselves with. And basically, that's just the research. And so what we know is everything in life is contagious. You know, you hang around unhealthy people, and, you know, if they're your primary relationships, then you're seeing your future. You hang around people that are working on life and honest and successful, and then you're seeing your future. So I would say, I'm not saying don't have dysfunctional friends. If we didn't have dysfunctional friends we were close to, how boring would life be, right?
That's right.
But I'm just saying, you don't have to drink the same Kool-Aid that your idiot friends are drinking. Just have fun with them.
That's fun.
And you want to be around some people that you're drinking their Kool-Aid, because the Kool-Aid's worth drinking. That's the most important thing you can do.
So good. Well, hey, thank you so much again for just investing an hour of your time in me and everyone who will listen to this. Appreciate all of your work, and thank you.
Okay, it's good to be with you.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to my interview with Dr. Henry Cloud. I hope that it added value to your life. Again, you can find ways to connect with Dr. Cloud and everything that we talked about, the books, Leadership University, his podcast, etc., all in the show notes at l3leadership.org/episode155. I want to let you know we recently introduced L3 Leadership Membership. For just $25 a month, you can become a member of L3 and you'll get into our breakfast events for free. You'll get a free L3 Leadership t-shirt, access to joining a mastermind group, and so much more. For more information on membership, go to l3leadership.org/membership. I want to thank our other sponsor, BAB Inc. They're an insurance broker led by my friend Russell Livingston, who has a huge passion for developing next generation leaders, which is why he hosts our monthly leadership breakfast. And they're just doing some really unique things in the insurance world. And so I just want to encourage you, if your organization has any insurance needs, check them out on the web at babbins.com. That's BABBINS.com. Lastly, if you want to stay in touch with everything we're doing here at L3 Leadership, you can sign up for our email list on the website at l3leadership.org. We'd appreciate that. And as always, if this podcast added value to your life, we would really appreciate if you would subscribe and leave a rating and review. It really does make a difference. And thank you so much for being a listener. As always, I like to end with a quote, and of course, I'm going to quote Henry Cloud on this one. He said this recently on Twitter. I love that he said, "Upping the ratio of thoughts about how you can change versus how someone else should change is like attaching yourself to a rocket ship of growth." I love that. Focus on growing yourself and how you can change. Stop worrying about everyone else. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Thanks for listening and being part of L3 Leadership. Laura and I appreciate you so much, and we'll talk to you next episode.